Thank you for joining us on Easy's Community Focus, a look at the issues that matter in South Florida and the people and organizations that are making a difference. So the beginning of hurricane season is just 10 days away. We're in the process of getting prepared for hurricane season. Now, South Florida hasn't had a direct hit from a storm since Wilma in 2005. And certainly over more than a decade, it's easy to get complacent about the preparations that are necessary in the event of a storm. And we have a lot of new residents, too, who've never experienced a hurricane. So today we'll get you on track with the supplies you need and an emergency plan with the help of Miami-Dade County's Emergency Director, Kurt Sommerhoff. Thanks for being here, Kurt.
Thank you.
So, okay, it's this look, 12 years since a storm, 11 years since we've had a hurricane hit directly.
Hurricane Wilma, 2005, right.
For anyone who, you know how with childhood we always keep the happy memories?
Sure.
It's like, oh, the good old days. So in case we've kind of, you know, glossed over what happened with Wilma, can you give us a replay of what we experienced, what the damage was in terms of dollars and human and home tolls?
Absolutely. So, you know, with Hurricane Wilma, again, for most of Miami-Dade County, certainly the northern part of Miami-Dade County, I mean, it was a Category 1 event for us. I mean, it was a stronger storm when it came through the west coast of Florida. But for Miami-Dade, it wasn't, you know, as severe. That being said, we had 8 working traffic lights left in Miami-Dade County the day after.
In the entire county.
We had probably, I think it was over 600,000 without power. That's residential units, not just people.
Right.
We had to open up, I would say, I'm thinking it was close to a dozen points of distribution to hand out things like water and ice and tarps and food and things like that. The Red Cross fed hundreds of thousands along with our partners, the Salvation Army. We had more blue roofs. And what I mean by blue roofs is more tarps on leaky roofs in Miami-Dade than our neighbors to the north in Broward County. And it was a significant event. It was a very significant event. I mean, sometimes people think back and go, oh, it was only a Category 1 storm, or oh, it wasn't that bad. It was pretty bad. It was pretty bad. And we had, you know, the gas station problems, you know, the long lines for gasoline, mm-hmm. the run on supplies. And some of that probably shouldn't have taken place because we had Hurricane Katrina earlier that year. So that really, if you weren't prepared earlier in the year, you should have been prepared, you know, for the latter part of the season.
Okay. So we will look to be prepared. What is the forecast for this year?
So right now, the National Hurricane Center forecast, we're still awaiting their forecast to be announced. Now, some of the other forecasting agencies like the United Kingdom has already come out. But the consensus so far is it's going to be a average to above average season. So somewhere in that 13 to 15 named storm range is what we're hearing right now.
And what are we expecting? What are the forecasters saying about El Nino, La Nina, the conditions that are favorable to creating hurricanes?
So right now, from what we're hearing is that there is an expectation that we're getting out of that El Nino cycle, and we'll be coming into the more La Nina, you know, that having an effect on things. Now, El Nino had that ability to kind of suppress the formation of storms, so we won't have that kind of favorable impact going into this season, or you know, as we go through this season.
Okay.
So that's something we need to be prepared for. Of course, that's only one thing. I mean, it's sea surface temperature. It's a number of things that you know have to come into play to work in the cycle of a storm's formation.
And when the Hurricane Center starts watching something that looks like it could develop, what are the different environmental factors and weather patterns that you're using to predict the track of a storm? And the tracking has gotten much better over the years. There's different factors that go into it.
Right. I mean, I won't pretend to play meteorologist because those guys are the best of the best
right.
at what they do. And even from meteorologist to meteorologist, as they track these storms in the Hurricane Center, some are a little bit more conservative than others with their forecast tracks and predictions. But one of the things I think we've seen over and over again is that the forecasting that does come out of the National Hurricane Center is really the best and the best in the country. They're not always perfect with their track, but over certainly time, historically, They've been the most accurate forecast there is out there, looking at the whole ensemble of models. And again, just last year, like you said, all the different things that come into play. Tropical Storm Erica last year had some impact with land, and so they're looking at that. The mountains in the Dominican Republic and their elevation, and will that disrupt the storm? You know, again, is it the storm starting to approach warmer or cooler water in front of it? Will that affect intensification, or will that cause the storm to start to slow down? We've seen storms degenerate from hurricanes back into tropical storms or depressions, and then regenerate after coming, you know, off a land mass. So there's so many different possibilities, and it's just one of those things that when it's in the area of South Florida, it's approaching our peninsula. We're keeping an eye on it, whether it's a tropical wave or it's a category 5 hurricane.
Okay.
Just
so,
never know.
Yeah. And then even depending on how strong it is, there are different kinds. You know, there are the wet storms, the windy storms, and those have different impacts too.
Sure. And there's the storms that have a, you know, more finite eye in them. You know, the weather, you know, they always talk about the upper right quadrant is where that most severe, or they call the dirty part of the storm is. But for storms that don't have that perfect eye, sometimes that type of weather, that dirty part of the storm is trailing behind the storm. So
right. There's
you know, there's a lot of things that are not necessarily, you know, rules that
right.
you have to kind of follow with these things. And we ask a ton of questions. The Weather Service in Miami is fantastic with us. It's great that they're just down the street. But we ask them a ton of questions. They get on conference calls and webinars with us. We use every one of their products to really make our decisions on preparing the public or protecting the public.
Okay. And of course, you have to prepare yourselves as well. In a minute, we'll talk about what the public needs to do. What happens in the Office of Emergency Management when at the beginning of hurricane season? What are your preparations?
A lot of preparatory actions, a lot of training that goes on to refamiliarize a lot of our partner agencies with their roles and responsibilities. We get a lot of new people. We just did a drill, a statewide hurricane exercise, where we brought all of our agencies into the EOC to make sure that we could practice our preparatory actions with a storm coming, approaching South Florida. I believe we're taking the Hurricane Ike scenario that we had several years ago and using that as the storm path that's going to impact us. And we really run them through all the numbers. And then there's that training, as well as going over the plans and responsibilities of agencies in the county that fall outside the Emergency Operations Center. Those things police do out in the field, fire does out in the field. All those, what we call our EOC essential employees. So they're maybe not essential to their departments, but we've got them filling roles after a disaster to hand out water and ice, to do traffic control, to help out in shelters, to help feed people, to help people with pets, to help the disabled. So there's all those type of things, all those boxes that we're checking to make sure that we as a county are ready to go.
And now the fire rescue, you're in the same department now. Technically, they've done a little moving around. Does
Correct.
That make it easier for you to coordinate with them?
It certainly does. You know, certainly these are the people that you're engaged with day to day. So you have this relationship with them. In emergency management, we talk about, you know, it's emergency management is a coordination of information and resources. To get that done well, it means that you've got, hopefully you got good relationships with the agencies that you're working with. So being that we're now part of fire rescue, we do have a good relationship with our counterparts within the fire department and can really, we interact with them day to day, and we can really count on them to do what they need to do for us.
Okay. With 10 days until the start of hurricane season, we're talking with Kurt Sommerhoff, the director of the Miami-Dade County Emergency Operations Center. You've been there for how long now?
This is my 7th year as director, and I've been there off and on. I was out for 2 years, but I started there in 2001.
Okay, so you've been through the biggest storms that we've dealt with
sure.
in this century.
Absolutely. So 04, 05, I was the operations chief in the Emergency Operations Center, you know, guiding response actions for those 2 years. Absolutely.
Okay, so for anyone who lives here, we all need to be prepared, and we hear it over and over again. But like I said at the beginning, we can get complacent when we go for a lot of years without a storm, and people tend to think, nothing's going to happen. But as you said, it only takes one. Where should someone start? A family? Let's do that. We'll talk about business. people with pets, what do they start with to make a plan for a disaster or a hurricane?
Well, what applies to all those groups you just mentioned is the same philosophy, and it's get a kit, make a plan, and be informed. So, you know, get your emergency kit together, identify those things that you're going to need, your community or your family's going to need, your business is going to need. You know, my pets are part of my family, so I include pets with the family part. But, you know, so your emergency kit, it should have a gallon of water per person per day. If you have pets, a half a gallon of water per pet per day. You want to have your non-perishable goods. You want to have prescription medications. And if you need to get them refilled before a storm, by all means, go to the drugstore and get those prescriptions refilled. We encourage people to have battery-operated radios still, so they can certainly listen to people like you. And when we're trying to communicate information through the local news agencies to get out to the public, we always, you know, we still encourage people, if you do have a home landline phone, to still have one of those old analog phones you can plug in, because your cordless one won't work if you don't have electricity and you don't have a generator.
What about wireless cell phones?
Cell phones, you know, so we have talked to a lot of our cellular partners, and certainly the cellular infrastructure is a lot better than it was in 04 and 05, but that doesn't mean it's certainly hurricane proof. And that also doesn't mean that if everybody has to go to their cell phones to talk, that the system can't be overwhelmed. So there are resources to bring in. I'm learning all these new interesting cellular acronyms. Like there's something called a CAL, called the Cells on Wheels.
Oh, wow.
And also COLTS, Cells on Light Trucks, where they can actually bring those in to some of the harder hit areas or areas that are experiencing, a lot of calls that are overwhelming their system, to try to relieve some of that and get communications going. So yes, you know, if cell phones are working, that's fantastic.
Okay.
And certainly, you know, if your car battery's working, that's a great power source to charge your cell phones and be able to keep communicating with people.
Okay. And there are people who are saying, what's a landline?
Right. Absolutely.
Never heard of it. What's a phone that comes out of the wall? back to what needs to be in the emergency kit.
So, of course, flashlights, extra batteries. Hurricanes can be stressful things, so we always encourage, you know, games for the kids to keep them occupied, because, again, if their phones or their tablets and those, no internet is available. You can only imagine, right? So have things to keep the kids occupied. I always say things like hand sanitizer is important. And I think we also, you know, in my opinion, we become somewhat of a cash-only society. Credit cards aren't working, those things. Get a few bucks out of the ATM and have that ready before the storm as well.
How far in advance should you make these preparations?
You know, I think, you know, in South Florida, there's a whole range of hazards that we could be impacted with any time of the year, whether it's, you know, the dry season and wildfires that can affect us, you know, some of our residents out west, to some of the crazy weather we just had just here recently through the winter.
Yeah.
With tornadoes and things like that and impacting parts of our county. So disaster can really strike anywhere. So people should be prepared, you know, at all times. You know, replenish those canned goods in your kit. You know, you can cook up, things. You know, I always tell people, buy things that you normally eat.
Okay.
Sometimes I see people rush to the grocery stores and they buy all this Vienna sausages and baked beans. And I'm like, do people really eat these things? You know, so I mean,
it's spam season.
Yeah, it's spam. Yeah. It's like, wow, this is crazy.
Okay. And so, they make so many things now in cans, you know, you can have full meals practically.
Absolutely.
Okay. So we've got the emergency kit. And then as far as a plan, having an emergency plan and who you're in contact with, what does that involve?
So part of the plan should certainly be to have a communication plan. If you've got family that are out of the area, they're going to be concerned about you. You know, maybe you've got kids away at college and they're concerned about you, what have you. Have a communication plan. Now, if the internet is working, Facebook does some great things, is a great tool, social media tools, to let people know that you're well and okay. There's also the ability, you know, if you can have that one person maybe living out of the area or even out of state that you contact, that's going to be available to contact everybody else on your behalf, because you might be really, you know, challenged with, you know, getting your home back in order and those type of things. So at least have that one person that you can reach out to and let them do the chain of calls and things like that on your behalf after that. Know if you're in an evacuation zone or a storm surge zone. All of our zones are built around the impacts of storm surge. Know what zone you're in, because if there is an impending hurricane, we're going to look to where the impacted areas of the county are for storm surge, and then that's how we're going to start to develop our evacuation strategies.
What is the Emergency and Evacuation Assistance Program?
Okay, so this originally was just what we called our special needs program. So those people that had needed assistance with evacuation and specialized emergency sheltering, we had a registry that allowed those people. Typically, people were on maybe supplemental oxygen, or they were bed bound. They needed assistance with daily living. It gave us the ability to know where they are. Contact them before a storm, provide them with assistance in evacuation, assign the appropriate evacuation transportation, whether that be an ambulance or just an STS vehicle or something like that, and then get them to the appropriate shelter. Sometimes that could be just a regular general population shelter. Other times it had to go to a medical evacuation center. And then in other cases, we would actually send them to a hospital, a medical management facility, where they would get care there. We've now opened that up also to anybody with evacuation assistance needs, because there's a number of people in the community that are very self-sufficient. They just don't have transportation.
Right.
And maybe getting to just the normal bus pickup point isn't a possibility for them because of maybe vision impairment or something like that. Or they're just elderly and there's challenges with that. And then it's also become kind of a welfare registry as well. So you're not in an evacuation area. You're going to stay in your home, but maybe you live alone.
Right.
We can contact you afterwards and make sure that you're still okay after the storm.
Okay. So that's actually different from evacuation zones that have something to do with the storm surge.
Correct.
That's more about personal need.
Correct.
Okay. So when you're looking at the zones, have they changed the evacuation zones, places that might be subject to storm surge over the years? Do you reassess that?
So we did a regional evacuation study back in, I want to say, 2012. So the zones did change. We used to have three zones in Miami-Dade County, an A, B, and C zone. Now it goes all the way to E. So we have, we have five zones. Of course, the people who live closest to the coast are most vulnerable to storm surge, just because of their proximity to the coast. Those that live in and around Biscayne Bay, because it's a shallow bay, we see some great significance for storm surge there. People who were here during Hurricane Andrew remember the Burger King Corporation, where we saw it was over 17 feet of storm surge along the coast. So South Dade really has some storm surge vulnerability problems. It is not just a coastal problem, though. Storm surge can travel several miles inland, especially in South Dade, low elevations. But it also pushes up canals and rivers. So up the Miami River, up the New River, up the intracoastal and into low-lying areas along those areas are also vulnerable. So we encourage people to know your zone. They can find out by going to our website, looking for a hurricane guide that are now out and available, or simply by calling Miami-Dade 311.
Okay, and the website is miamidade.gov.
.gov, and they can go to /OEM.
OEM. Okay. Yep. You mentioned something about 17 feet of storm surge. So is that how high the storm surge is?
Right. So storm surge is the water above normal tide.
Okay.
So you have what is your predicted normal high and low tides, and then storm surge is what's above that. It's really the hurricane and the hurricane force winds interacting with the surface of the water that gets pushed onto land. And when the storm is having this interaction deep out in the ocean, there's really there's waves, but there's not really storm surge until it gets closer to land, and then there's nowhere for that water to go. So it essentially gets pushed inland, and then it just basically follows gravity and will get pushed in. Of course, you got wind-driven waves on top of this as well. It's the most destructive part of the storm. Our zones are based on it. So our evacuations, evacuation order is always tied to the people who live in the storm surge zones. And then we usually add low-lying areas because of the potential for rainfall that might be associated with the storms. And then we always include mobile home parks because of their vulnerability to the wind.
Okay. Can they just pick up and drive away?
But before storm?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's part of our, you know, being informed and having your plan. So if you know you live in one of these zones and an evacuation order is coming, then you need to be prepared for where you're going to go. Are you going to go stay with a friend in an inland part of the county? Are you going to go outside the county? Are you going to go to one of our evacuation centers that's staffed by the American Red Cross? There's all those options available to you, but you need to think about those things now before the storm.
Okay. Now, how far in advance of a storm coming would the Hurricane Center or the Office of Emergency Management actually release an evacuation order?
It depends on the storm. Okay. So, worst case scenario, worst storm out there, Category 5, coming at a slow forward speed that's really jumping a lot of water on us, and then is also a large storm in terms of its size. Something like that, we may have to start making evacuation orders actually 3 days before its arrival. So 3 days before the arrival of even tropical storm force winds at our coast, we're going to have to start moving people. And we know that can be a problem because it could be a sunny day outside here in Miami-Dade County, and we're starting to tell people, you got to leave Miami Beach.
Yeah.
Tourists, you got to go home.
Yeah.
So
they've got to be resistant to that.
Absolutely. And as you said earlier, you know, I think from some of our surveys, we've seen that people are, they tend to ask somebody else, what are you doing? A neighbor, a friend, a coworker.
Oh, interesting.
So how, you know, so what are you doing? Are you evacuating or what are you doing for your home to prepare? And we want people to have those kind of conversations now because that kind of fuels preparedness in a sense. But when it comes time where the mayor or the fire chief or myself is standing behind a podium from the EOC saying now's the time to go, we need really everybody to heed those calls and evacuate.
Where do people go if they have to evacuate?
We've got some of the best building codes in the country here in Miami-Dade County. So we don't necessarily encourage people to leave the county. We just encourage them to leave the evacuation areas and to go further into the inland part of our county, out of the areas that are going to be affected by storm surge. So coworker, friend's house, always going to be, you know, the best option, you know, relative that has a home further inland. If you don't, there's also hotel, motel options further inland. And of course, there's always evacuation centers. We use Miami-Dade Public Schools as our evacuation centers. We put out a new list on May 1st of every year. We have three different waves of schools that will open. And so typically it's the cafeteria, the gymnasium, the auditorium in some of these schools. We typically use middle schools and high schools just because some of the facilities like bathrooms and toilet heights and all that good stuff are, you know, not going to be troublesome to adults.
Right.
So we can take those things into account, and the Red Cross and schools are great partners that really do wonderful things for us. They at the start of hurricane season, for all those schools we pick, make sure that they have extra weeks worth of food at those schools at all times. So at any time we need to open it up as a shelter, they're already stocked with food to feed that shelter population.
What about your pets?
Pets. Okay. Pets are people too. And for the longest time, I think we're probably one of the very first, maybe not the first, but one of the very first counties in Florida to have pet friendly shelters. So not all of our shelters are pet friendly, but we always open a pet friendly shelter as an option to people. Even in 2004, 2005, we didn't see a lot of people take advantage of those things. Maybe they just simply didn't know enough about them. But I'm here to tell you now, we do have pet-friendly shelters. They would be staffed by Animal Services Department staff and other county employees, like I talked about earlier, to provide assistance at those shelters. And we certainly encourage people to, if you're going to evacuate, take your pets with you, please, by all means.
Okay. When should a business inform their employees whether or not they need to come to work?
The employer should have those conversations with their employees now. Let them make sure they understand what the expectations of them are, how long they need to stay to prepare the business before they're going to be allowed to go home and prepare their homes. You know, how late do they need to work? What are the instructions for reporting back to work? And what are their roles and responsibilities for things like assessing the business, getting the business back up and running, and those type of things.
Okay. You have a lot of ways that you reach out to people when you need them to know information. Can you go over, you've got Miami-Dade Alerts.
Correct.
And then there's social media. Give us an overview of those.
Right. So we've got a whole portfolio of ways of doing things now. So Miami-Dade Alerts is one option. It's an opt-in system. People can go to miamidade.gov/OEM, sign up for Miami-Dade Alerts. And what that does is it'll push out any kind of emergency warnings to people that are subscribers, and then it'll tell them what actions we want them to take. So we don't overwhelm people with information. If there's not a hurricane watch or a tornado warning or something like that, we're not pushing information out from it. So we're not gonna overwhelm people with anything. And our criteria for pushing something out through Miami-Dade Alerts means we also need to push out some kind of actionable item for the public to take in terms of safety. So if there is nothing, I mean, if it's just South Florida is going to be receiving severe thunderstorms today, we're not going to push anything out. Of course, if that was the criteria, probably between April and November, you'd get an alert, what, twice
every
a day?
Day.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. And where do you sign up for the alerts?
So you can certainly go to miamidade.gov /OEM, and it'll be right on the front of our page for people to sign up for Miami-Dade Alerts. We do have social media.
Okay.
We are verified on both Facebook and Twitter. So on Facebook, it's Miami-Dade Office of Emergency Management. And our Twitter handle is Miami-Dade EM.
Okay.
So both of those are ways you can follow us day to day. And again, we're always putting out preparatory information on those. Again, different themes and things the office is doing to make sure people should be informed about.
Okay. And then the greatest preparatory guide that you have is your annual hurricane guide.
Right.
Where can we get the 2016 hurricane guide?
So the hurricane guide also available on our site in a PDF form, so people can download it from wherever they are with their internet tool of choice.
Mm-hmm.
But they can also pick up hard copies at any Miami-Dade library, any of the commission district offices, certainly at fire rescue headquarters. And then we do make them available to a lot of our municipality partners, and so they'll be available at some of the cities as well.
Okay. And what's Ready South Florida?
So a few years ago, because so many people live in Dade and work in Broward or vice versa, or maybe they have a weekend home down in the Keys, and, you know, so really we're becoming one big South Florida region.
Yeah.
So the directors of Palm Beach, Broward, myself and Miami-Dade and Monroe got together, and we kind of formed this regional preparedness partnership, which was ReadySouthFlorida.org. So ReadySouthFlorida.org took all the readiness information available by the federal government, which is consistent with the preparedness principles that we all employ here in South Florida. We say, you know, be prepared for at least 3 days. And, you know, these are the things you should do to prepare. So ready.gov and a lot of those resources available there have been brought down to the local level, to the Ready South Florida site. And it's all packaged there. And then there's also links directly to the four county emergency management websites. So you can find out particular information for the county that you live in, for Miami-Dade, our emergency and evacuation assistance program.
Okay. Now we talk, and this is just the last question actually, about evacuating, leaving. We think about getting out of the way of a storm, but you have people who go in after a storm, the community emergency response teams. What do they do, and how can someone participate?
Okay, great. So community emergency response teams, you know, first responders get overwhelmed after emergency events. The 911 centers light up, and police and fire are just called out to all parts of the community. And they can't always get to everybody right away. So the idea with CERT teams was formed so we could teach residents in our community certain skills like first aid and search and rescue and some triage and fire suppression, to be able to kind of fill that gap, to be out there, assess their own neighborhood, help their neighbors, from potential harm and again, fill that gap until first responders can get in, get out there and help people. So we hold CERT classes throughout the year.
Okay.
We sometimes do a annual CERT exercise or regional CERT exercise with some of our partners. And so all people, again, would have to do, go to the website, miamidade.gov/OEM, and there's information on the CERT teams there, and we can get people the information they need and tell them when the next class is starting.
Awesome. Okay, so that's really the locus of everything, miamidade.gov/OEM.
Absolutely. Everything is driven from there, from our preparedness actions to our response and recovery actions.
Okay, well, I feel very confident that you guys are well-prepared and know what you're doing. And if all of us take a minute to go to miamidade.gov/OEM, we can get that 2016 hurricane guide, or go to readysouthflorida.org so we can be prepared as the Office of Emergency Management. As always, I wish you an easy year. We hope that you don't have to work too hard this year.
I hope so, too.
Okay. And if there is anything to be aware of, we'll certainly relay that to the audience and we'll be in touch with you.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Kurt Sommerhoff, the director of the Emergency Operations Center in the Office of Emergency Management for Miami-Dade County. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to EZ's Community Focus, a look at the issues that matter in South Florida and the people and organizations that are making a difference. If you'd like to make a comment or have a suggestion for a topic, you can email me at ellen@easy93.com.